You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we get movies released quicker than California and New York complete high-speed rail lines. I'm your host, Justin Emlesneski, the hopeful bromantic, and this week has been interesting. It's been a bit crazy. There's been a lot going on. Libertarians went kind of nuts this week. We'll talk about that a little bit. I had an interesting experience on Twitter, which then completely flipped itself and became very affirming, so we'll talk about that a little bit too. But first, got to bring in my co-host. Joining me this trip from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Happy Zombie Jesus Day. It is that time of year where we get together and eat lots of meats and have a day off from the restaurant. So meeting my business partner, and we're going to have a nice celebratory Zombie Jesus dinner this afternoon.
Yeah, we are recording this on Easter Sunday. You all will hear it the day after. But eating meat is every day of my life, William.
Well, it's every day of my life, too, but it's not every day I get prime rib. That's going to be slow-cooked all afternoon. So,
yeah, that's pretty awesome. I'm pretty jealous when you told me about that. I was like, that is a great Easter meal. That is a great Easter meal. I'm so glad that a Jewish guy died by torture, so you can have prime rib.
I know. I fake it. I thank him every year.
Anything else going on? Well, how's the puppy doing?
The puppy's doing great. He's tried to interrupt the podcast right when we got started, so he's back. He's taking a nap now. But yeah, he's growing and growing and being a general terror. I did take him down to the Strand. It's the kind of the sidewalk along the beach in Hermosa Redondo, and we just walked up and down, and boy does he turn heads, man. The Aussie Shepherd with the blue eyes, he's turning a lot of heads. Yeah, you know what's the other thing that was interesting about the beach, Justin, is how many volleyball players there were. I didn't think there was any volleyball nets up. At least the city took them down at the beginning of COVID. So I wonder if the city's put them back up or if people have just said, fuck it, and just brought their own nets.
I doubt the city's put them back up. They would have to have brought their own nets. I mean, that's one of those things that it just sort of, and this leads into the first story perfectly, so we'll hit the music in a second. But it's one of those things, it's a reminder of how long are we going to allow ourselves to be put through this? It's just a small thing you have to do. It's not that hard to get a net. It's not that hard to put it up. It's not that hard to take it down. So good on them. Good on those volleyball players.
Yeah, I guess for being a holiday weekend, it was light at the beach. But for being what I've been normally observing, it was a pretty big crowd for a 62-degree Saturday.
Yeah, it's inspiring. It's inspiring that in the LA area, there's enough people who are willing to flout the rules and just say, you know what, I want to do this. I want to live my life. That's good. That's good. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on the roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and As always, if you would like to support the show, you can do so through two ways, either Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. Any and all support is appreciated, including affirmations, so don't feel obligated. But also, if you enjoy what you hear and you think we deserve it, hit us with something. It's greatly appreciated. That's themidside.com/locals or themidside.com/Patreon. William, the first thing I want to talk about today is something that I don't know if we talked about exactly. I know I was really big with the mask thing in the beginning where I was like, we're going to have to wear masks forever. And I'm still not convinced that we're ever going to take our masks off. I'm waiting for the end of the school year to see what happens. I think a lot of people are waiting for the end of the school year. So I want to see what happens at the end of the school year. You know, I think people are counting on the fall. We saw the NFL said Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, said they expect the stadiums to be full capacity in the fall. So I think a lot of people are expecting summer to sort of be the cutoff of all of these overarching laws and rules. But I'm not convinced about the masks, and we'll see. But the other thing that's sort of a cognate of the masks is this topic that's caused quite a stir recently, and it's the idea of vaccine passports. And the reason it got really, really big, William, is I think you were the one who showed me this story, the story about the app that New York has developed. Is it New York State or New York City?
I think it was New York State, but I have to pull the story again.
Yeah. So it's an app where they give you a QR code, and I think somebody else can scan it, and it just tells them whether you've been vaccinated or not. And it's supposed to be an easy way for venues and such to filter whether you are vaccinated or not. Now, William, I don't remember the details of the story. Is this going to be legally mandated by New York?
This is the controversy, right? Like, no one is really saying what is the idea here. They're kind of like, it's sort of a trial balloon, right? They're trying to say, oh, well, we could loosen restrictions. You know, we can give you your freedoms back if you get this passport, right? If businesses start requiring this passport. Also, there's some of this mealy mouth, this is just an option so that we can open faster. That's the other thing to say, right? I mean, forgetting the fact that I thought vaccines were the reason, you know, vaccines, I thought the carrot there was that we wouldn't have to wear masks so that we can open faster. But that's also
well, the whole thing with vaccines, right, before carrot. We even delve into the vaccine passport thing, William, the whole thing about vaccines is they weren't tested to see if they stopped the spread. So now everyone's saying, oh, well, they don't stop the spread. They just lessen your symptoms. So you still have to wear a mask. You still have to socially distance. So the whole
isn't that blowing up the hierarchy, though? The whole reason we were trying to stop the spread is because it was killing people. So if it's not going to kill people anymore, why do we care about the spread?
Hey, I'm with you, man. I agree with you 100%. That's a great way of putting it. But that's just what they're saying. And that's really what that's revealing, right? It's what's revealing about the whole thing. And there are sort of two ways to look at all of this. It's what you just said. They're dangling the carrot, trying to get people to do this so they can open up, because this is just a new way of them exerting control, right? New York does not want to give up the control it's gained. And that's the thing that libertarians are flipping out about, right? And I saw it on Twitter. I don't know if it was elsewise, but libertarians were really going crazy on Twitter this week about the vaccine passport thing. And that's one of the two ways to look at this, right? Is this is further government overreach, which if it becomes a mandated thing, it is government overreach. Now, here's a legitimate question I have for you, William, and I want to get your opinion on it. Is there ever a time where a vaccine passport could be legitimate? And I ask that question because we don't get vaccine passports for things we're required to get when we're young, right? We have to get a measles vaccination when we're young, right? A polio vaccination. All of the kids nowadays get chickenpox vaccinations. All of these are just assumed. They don't make you get a passport for it. But I'm assuming that's because those are a long-term issue, whereas this is a virus that just popped up and is, you know, quote-unquote killing a lot of people suddenly, so we're trying to get rid of it immediately. So I would think there would be some sort of time frame on such a vaccine passport, the idea of, like, maybe for the next 2 years there has to be a vaccine passport. If this is, I'm just approaching this rationally. So I don't think COVID meets that threshold, because I think this is over-exaggerated, right? We've been well over this on the show. But could there ever be, William, a short-term virus that was killing people at such a rate and was so contagious that a vaccine passport could be a legitimate government policy for national health and safety?
I don't think we have to do a hypothetical. We can look at a disease that already is out there, and that's yellow fever. So,
yellow fever's been around. I feel personally attacked right now.
Yellow fever's been around a long time, and the vaccine, unfortunately, hasn't been around as long, right? I think it was developed in the 60s, maybe. But there's still countries that suffer from yellow fever. And so you do not there is no yellow fever vaccine passport. The way it works is if you're coming from a country that has yellow fever, they require some countries when you enter them that traditionally could have issues with yellow fever. They will require those folks traveling from those countries to show proof that they have had the yellow fever vaccine. Now, notice that's not a passport, right? It's not a government registered thing. It's like, hey, show us your, you know, your vaccination card for yellow fever to prove that you've been vaccinated against yellow fever. We also do that I used to work with the military a lot. When we would travel to certain countries that would have risks for certain diseases, we would also take vaccines then. But we wouldn't be asked at the border crossing, right, for proof of those vaccines. It was just an advisory, right? Like, you're going into an area where the risk is higher here, so take it. So I think the yellow fever example is kind of where things will go, right? If there's an outbreak, let's say in, let's pick a country that, you know, is not suffering from COVID. So anywhere in Africa, basically. Let's not talk about why. Obesity. Or lack of obesity in Africa. Let's say that...
I heard Dr. Drew talking about on his show with Adam that they use hydrochloroquine a lot in Africa.
Yeah, but don't talk about that either. Definitely contribute.
Yeah.
So let's pick South Africa. So let's say South Africa has an outbreak. And so people will say, hey, for the next, you know, 6 weeks or 12 weeks or whatever, if you're traveling from South Africa to, say, New Zealand, who doesn't have any cases right now or very few cases, then you have to have proof of vaccination. I think that would be rational, right? That's not a vaccine passport, though.
So then I get what you're saying. I'm down with that. But then is the issue rhetorical? And this is not to defend the vaccine passport. I want to make a point about why the rhetoric is insidious. It's rhetorical because you could just say, well, get a app from your healthcare provider on your phone that has a list and proof of all the vaccinations you have that you can show when it's necessary. But instead, we've created this idea that you need government-mandated, the rhetoric of the word passport is you need a government-mandated and approved document to get somewhere.
That's the rub, because I have an app on my phone right now that already lists all my vaccinations.
Right. Okay, so you proved my point.
Yeah, and it's provided by UCLA Health, right? So I don't need a vaccine passport, right? I mean, isn't this strange that we live in a world where at once we are saying, hey, we should make this government mandated vaccine passport so that people have to use it to do, you know, things in public, and at the same time it is completely racist to require an ID to vote? How are they going to get a vaccine passport without an ID, first of all, these mysterious people who don't have IDs and want to vote? And then,
right, unless you give it to them through their healthcare provider, which just goes to what we just said. It's just
you can't get
thing.
Healthcare without an ID either. I mean, emergency care you can, but like not like you can't just walk into a random doctor's office and get a physical without showing some sort of ID.
Well, I think that's the extra level. There's an extra level of insidiousness here where they want people to be able to walk in wherever they want and get a free vaccine from the government. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true. And then, I mean, hey, I say go for it, because then all the anti-vaxxers have to do is just have someone else get a vaccine and put it in their name. So problem solved for the anti-vaxxers, I guess.
Well, and that's the greater problem with the app, right? I mean, I don't know how you're the information security guy. I don't know how hackable this app is or anything, but if they create paper vaccine passports, it'll be really easy to Photoshop those.
My vaccine card is... I have it right here in my hand, actually. It's here on my desk. This is ridiculous, right? Like, this is the proof of my vaccine, and it's literally just first dose, Pfizer, date, healthcare professional or clinic site, CC. I could print this card and exactly duplicate it for any person. They didn't even write my name on it. It's blank. It's still blank.
It's you got the COVID vaccine?
Yep, got the second one on April Fool's Day.
What was the reason you got the COVID vaccine?
Well, I think for me, I don't think I'm at risk for it. I think I probably already had it, in fact, back in February, when we were told that it was impossible for us to get back in February. I just got it just because it was available, and since I do work in the restaurant, I do see a lot of people, and especially we had our fundraiser where I worked in the store all day, and there was we had a lot of people come in the store on that day, and so I just like, hey, does the risk to me is zero for side effects and zero for getting COVID, so it was there was no downside, no upside, so I just went ahead and got it.
Interesting. Well, on the other end of the spectrum, I am not going to get the vaccine unless I need it to go to things I want to go to, which is part of why this vaccine passport is so interesting to me and such an important discussion.
Yeah, I think that kind of entered my calculus as well, because I know I look like the one place I do travel for work is Dublin. And I was like, oh, I'm going to guess that, you know, as part of the EU, they're going to require proof of the COVID vaccine to travel. And traveling to Dublin. So kind of looking forward to that. I was like, I might as well get it and get it out of the way. And then no one can say anything when travel to Dublin is ever opened back up and I go out, I'll be able to say I have the vaccine. But now, right. I mean, I could have just faked this card. So I probably should have just done that. Justin, would you like me to make you a COVID-19 vaccination record card that you can provide to your healthcare provider?
No, I am going to follow the law that exists, William. I do live in Florida, though, where DeSantis has said the passport is not going to happen. He said he's not going to allow it to happen. And, you know, I've decided not to get the vaccine because I'm under 40. I'm healthy. And I'm not going
to
put
anything
in my...
Made a point out, I'm 41. Thanks a lot.
That was the point I was making, but I'm sorry to hear that. No, you're pretty healthy for your age too. That's why I was surprised. Like, you're pretty healthy for someone in their 30s. That's why I was surprised you took it. It's just, look, I know there probably aren't any side effects, but like, I don't get the flu vaccine either. And the reason it's the same thing, like, I don't usually get sick. And if I do get sick, it's not that bad. And if I were to get COVID, odds are it wouldn't be that bad. So I'm not going to put something in my body that I don't know what's going to happen. Why am I going to change what's going in my body if there's no reason to? It's not like, you know, the other day I went and I got a checkup and they asked me when I had the tetanus vaccine. And I said, I don't know. They're like, you're supposed to get it once every 10 years. Have you? I was like, I don't know. I don't remember. So they gave it to me. That's reasonable to me. Like, I know what the positive side effects of that are. So the risk is worth taking there. But with this, I don't see the point. And especially with the vaccine passport thing. But with the vaccine passport, William, we've already talked about the government overreach side of it. What bothers me the most out of all of this stuff is using Florida as the perfect example. It's like with masks, right? DeSantis in October passed an executive order saying you can't be fined or suspended or, you know, punished. Sorry, fined or punished for not wearing a mask. I'm used to Roger Goodell, right? Fining and suspending people. You can't be fined or punished in the state of Florida. But the counties still pass mask mandates, which those technically have no power. Because they contradict what the governor says. I looked into this. They have no power. But private businesses still have signs outside, especially in Orange County, not as much in Osceola County, but especially in Orange County that say, due to order of the county, you must wear a mask in this establishment. Now, they're either willfully ignorant, which is possibly the case, and they're afraid because they're that ignorant, but there's also a level of complicitness in all of this. And what I mean by that, like Walmart, Universal, Disney, they're requiring mask mandates. So even if, William, the government doesn't require a vaccination passport, these private companies could. And what does that say if, I mean, we just saw it with the New York Mets. I don't know if you saw they announced. You either have to have a negative test within 72 hours, prove you have immunity, or prove you've taken the vaccine. What are we doing as a society when we're starting to do this? Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, I think the thing that bothers me the most is the bargaining with our freedom. That's the thing that angers me. We've seen it. I forgot the name of the restaurant, but there's a restaurant out here that's been fighting the closure laws, and they've padlocked them. They've shut off their power. They've turned off their water. But it hasn't stopped them. They keep unlocking the door. They even just recently arrested the son and claimed he was the owner. They keep opening, and they've already conceded in court that they couldn't close the business the way they did it. They've basically given up that argument, but they're trying to make an example. They're trying to bargain with this, bargain the freedoms that these folks have already demonstrated they have in court. They're trying to bargain with them and say, well, you should just submit to our power, and then we'll give you your freedom back. And that's what this sort of feels like, right? They're bargaining with, they're saying, hey, we've already taken this away from you, and we're not going to give it back unless you give us something else in return. And that's what really bothers me.
No, 100%, 100%. And what they're playing on is people's fear or their good nature to get ahead in this way. And it's scary that people are going along with it. And what I mean by people's good nature is, this is something even Dr. Drew talked about. And, you know, this comes up all the time, but in this specific case, he's talking about there's two ways you can look at this pandemic and the way we're approaching it. You know, they ask him, should you get the vaccine? And he says, well, you have to look at your individual situation, as I just did. And you also have to look at herd immunity, the collective situation. And everyone is approaching this, William, from the collective situation. Even Dr. Drew, he's normally very rational. And this is a way that, you know, rational people can disagree. And I, you know, we can argue from an objectivist standpoint whether he's being rational looking at it from the collectivist standpoint. But it's just that, you know, he's coming from a different premise, and I can disagree with him. But that's what he said. He said, individually, you may say you shouldn't get it. So he wouldn't disagree with the reasoning I presented to you. But he would say that collectively, you should get it to try to move towards herd immunity. And I think that's what a lot of this is playing on, is it's forcing us deeper into collectivism.
I think you can kind of see that in even the choices, the difference in individual choices between you and I. Because I do work in the restaurant weekly, at the very least, there is a sort of herd immunity, not in the sense of like societal herd immunity, but in the store, right? I don't want to be the one spreading it around my own staff, right? Some people I have to interact with, you know, less than 6 feet apart constantly. So yeah, it's no big deal. It's, you know, those two minor little things can push my calculus in one direction and your calculus in the other direction. They both be completely rational choices.
Yeah, but I also teach. Explain that one.
Children and COVID? Almost.
Yeah. That's what people don't realize. Children don't really spread it or get it.
Exactly.
But what's the difference? Let me ask you this. I'm going to push back on you a little bit. What's the difference between arguing about the collectivized approach and the way you did it? Are you looking at it from a collective approach?
No, I guess I would say I'm not looking at society as an abstraction is the difference. I'm looking at like my social group, right? And the fact that there are higher risk, you know, I'm in downtown Long Beach, you know, there's otherly housed people that come into the store constantly and have to be kicked out.
They're homeless.
They're differently homed. Home challenged? What, I don't remember. What does the governor here call it again? I can't remember.
Unsheltered.
Unsheltered. There we go. So yeah. So, you know, there's, like I said, there's a bunch of little minor things that have to do with the way I interact with society. But I'm not looking at it as like society, right? Like some,
right.
A disconnected abstract society.
Well, abstraction was the perfect word. Abstraction was the perfect word. I mean, and that's ultimately what collectivism is where you look at people as an abstraction rather than.
Well, it's really
specific,
a floating abstraction in that case, right? If I'm just saying, well, you know, if I'm like, imagine I'm imagining some of the folks that I work with in my day job. They never leave the house, right? But what would they need the vaccine for if they're under 40, if they're in shape, all those things, right? Except right. for maybe they would consider it if we were going to no longer be working remote, right? And even then, it's like, well, okay, well, what's the crew that we're interacting with? Okay, there's some international travel, blah, blah, blah. You know, so you can kind of do that calculus, right? Like, again, for me, the international travel possibility is another thing that kind of pushes it towards, might as well get it.
I mean, I think what you're talking about is why the Joker line is we live in a society, because that's what he does. He sees society, you know, he sees people as a floating abstraction rather than actual concretes. And that's why he causes the chaos and everything. I think that's why that line fits for that character so well. And yeah, society is a huge floating abstraction, a huge floating abstraction. I mean, you have an abstraction when you're seeing people based on the group they belong to, you know, their race or their gender, but it's not as floating. Floating meaning disconnected from any sort of reality. And that actually, what you're saying, the idea of floating abstraction, that really reminded me of a tweet I saw going around this this week that I thought was really important to highlight. So this person tweeted out a screenshot from a Reddit post, and he said, "I imagine so many people feel this way." Now, this Reddit post, I'm going to read it really quickly, is a response, I think, to what we're talking about in regards to the pandemic. It says, "I'm so fucking tired of being forced to care about everyone all at once." That's the subject, the title. "I'm just one guy. I try to be a good person. I try to treat everyone equally. I try to be kind and compassionate. I try to be a force of good. But I'm just one guy. I have problems of my own. I have a life of my own. I shouldn't be expected to constantly wade through the shit that is the political and societal hellscape of 2020. I'm not a racist because you don't think I'm angry enough. I'm not uneducated because I don't pour through hours of toxic political commentary. I'm not privileged for wanting to distance myself from hatred. I'm so sick of being alternatively mocked and hated for not living up to other people's freedom fighter fantasy. I'm trying my best, but I'm just one guy. Edit. I just want to say thanks to all the folks leaving comments like, get the fuck over yourself, you're a self-absorbed loser, and shut the fuck up. You've done a marvelous job demonstrating why this post was made." So, William, I think there are two things here based on the floating abstraction idea of society that you brought up. And the first is a phrase that really stood out to me here. He says, the political and societal hellscape of 2020. Isn't it you only see, and I'm biasing the question here, but I want to see your response. Isn't it you only see life in 2020 and currently as a political and societal hellscape if you're looking at things abstractly? Because concretely, besides what we've been forced to do with the shutdowns and everything, which I'm presupposing comes from the abstract concept of fear and this idea of the virus, isn't society not that bad? Isn't life pretty good?
Yeah, I think this comes into, like, the world is always ending in 20 years, constantly through human history. So there's, you know, it depends on how far you zoom out, right? Like, things have been bad in 2020. We had some bad things in 2020, but goddamn, does anyone remember 2001? I mean, does anyone remember, you know, the 70s? And the, how about the Great Depression? Like, There are other times where we've had societal issues, and that's not to minimize. There are some very real societal issues, and we talk about them on the show. But it's weird to think in this abstract and not at least mention, like, well, how are you doing? How is your life going? You know,
People even replied to him to make your point for you. People even replied to him and told him he was self-absorbed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I like this tweet in reply to that post. It said, "How dare people want to enjoy their own life rather than spending all of it fighting for mine?"
Yeah, and that's wonderfully sarcastic, that reply. And that goes to the second part of this. It reminded me of when I was younger, and there's a song called Kavanaugh Park by Something Corporate. I don't know. Do you know that song, William?
I don't know it from the title, but I bet if I heard it, I would remember.
Okay, well, there's a couple lyrics that really are related to this, and they're related. My reaction to them at the time when I was younger is related to this. For those of you who don't know, Cavanaugh Park is a real park that exists in Orange County, California. So, William, if you want to do the real pop punk thing, you can listen to this song, and once you know the song, you can go down there and visit the park, because this song was written about the experience of like reflecting in that park. So some of the lyrics are, "At Cavanaugh Park, where you used to take me to play in the sand and said to me, son, one day you'll be a man, and man can do terrible things. Yes, they can. But there was never any place for someone like me to be totally happy." And to me, those lyrics are all about like looking at the world and seeing how there are bad people out there and they do bad things and there's suffering going on. And if you focus on that, how could you ever be really happy if you know there are other people out there suffering? And that's what you're saying, William. It's this abstraction, this floating abstraction of badness being out there, right? It's the whole idea of, can you cure world hunger? Can you create world peace? This floating abstraction creates these unrealistic expectations. And it makes it so everyone would literally have to be depressed because the world has bad things in it.
I'm just scrolling through these replies, and I'm actually a little bit encouraged by the number of people kind of displaying that root of self-interest, right? Of understanding the pushback here. I'm kind of glad I scrolled through some of these. I mean, obviously you get a lot of the virtue signaling, but the idea that people, I think I got a little bit in some hot water at the beginning of the outbreak by saying, oh, well, you know, I'm going to turn these lemons into lemonade. I'm going to really work on, you know, on my health and working out. And, you know, I started taking up surfing and, you know, something I would never have had the time to do before. You know, getting a puppy, another thing I would never have had the time to do. So, you know, basically I said, you know, I'm going to take this, you know, bad situation, this bad societal, quote unquote, situation, and make some good value choices inside my own life. And I took some heat from that, because, you know, that's, I don't know, that shames people, I guess. I don't know. I don't understand exactly why that's such a bad perspective to bring, but, you know, it triggered some people.
Well, it does shame people. It reminds me of, and I think I might have mentioned this on the show last year, but I had read a tweet that said, you know, don't feel the pressure to come out of quarantine super fit and having written the great American novel. And then when I was in quarantine, I literally wrote a book, wouldn't call it anywhere close to the great American novel, but I was doing three sets of pull-ups, crunches, and tricep dips twice a day, once when I woke up and once, you know, a little bit before bed. And I was, you know, eating pretty well because meat became very expensive at that point, so I had to, you know, ration myself a little bit in order to stay within budget. So I came out in pretty good shape too. And that's the point, is people were already coming up with excuses not to work and to just use it as an excuse to just be like, ah, the world's against me. And so I think it does shame people. And that's, I think it goes back to, that's why I brought the song up in my head with the Cavanaugh Park, with this idea of, you ultimately, William, you have to focus inward and you have to focus and say, you know, if I'm going to feel that shame, well, maybe I should work.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, why take something, why not deal with what reality gives you and make good choices for yourself, right? I can't change the fact that things are locked down. I would much rather be, you know, going out on dates, you know, visiting, going down to San Diego. I used to do that at least once a month. You know, I would much rather be doing those things. I mean, I'm finally organizing a camping trip, hopefully, coming up. Because, you know, 2020, no camping, which is very strange for me.
Yeah. Well, there's one last thing I wanted to talk about this week, William. And it was a sort of crazy experience I had on Twitter that made me become very reflective, not about like myself or anything, but just sort of about social media and culture and society as a whole. And then that twisted into an experience that sort of resolved everything for me. And it was just sort of like a huge, like, wow, you know, I don't believe in a plan or a God or anything, but it's sort of like, wow, those happen so quickly together that that's interesting. So the other day I had someone make a gift for me of part of the opening titles for Zack Snyder's Justice League. And in the opening titles, there's one point where it says an Atlas Entertainment / Stone Quarry production. And so I got that brief gif of when it fades in and out. And I tweeted, this actually exists in an actual movie. Now, this started going viral a little bit. I got a little bit of attention for it. You know, there was a few days where it kept getting retweeted and liked and things like that. Now, I think most people probably missed the point, William, but you understand why I tweeted that, right?
Yeah, it's Fountainhead reference.
Well, it's a Fountainhead reference.
And then,
but right, yeah. Stone Quarry. But also, if you're someone who knows that you've been attacked or there are people out there who say you shouldn't be listened to because you're an Ayn Rand fan, you would make sure not to have those two together in the credits, right? Atlas and Stone Quarry.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. And after the credits, at the end of the movie, he had that there too, the two production logos. So did Atlas went into Stone Quarry. Now, someone replied to me and told me that, oh, you know, Snyder said that the large majority of things in the opening titles are put where they are on purpose. So I was like, oh, so he put Atlas and Stone Quarry together on purpose. And the person was like, yes. And then I made a joke where I was like, and people say, you know, Zack Snyder hates Ayn Rand. So this is where things got very Twitter. Somebody replied to me and said that Zack Snyder didn't found Atlas Entertainment. Which, William, did I say he founded Atlas Entertainment?
No.
Have I ever thought he founded Atlas Entertainment?
Probably not.
Right. So they're replying to something that wasn't even said. And then they also posted the quote that everyone uses to try and say Zack Snyder hates Ayn Rand. You know, I talked about this on a solo episode where I said the truth about Zack Snyder and objectivism through the lens of Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman. Look that episode up if you want to go really in depth into the philosophy. But this is the quote. It says, this was from an article on Comic Book Debate where he got interviewed. He said, I think she's incredible and insane, and she always said story first, not regarding her politics. But it was easy for her to fall victim to her own popularity, and she drank her own Kool-Aid. Snyder starts laughing. She didn't give a fuck. If she was alive right now, she would have fucking murdered Donald Trump. But she didn't even like Reagan. She thought he was a nationalist. But I'm rambling now. Sorry. And I read the second half for a reason, which we'll get to in a second. It has to do with the second half of the story. But William, this person does the same thing everyone else did, where he says, not regarding her politics, and you know, she drank her own Kool-Aid. And he takes that as saying, oh, this means he disagrees with her ideas and doesn't like her. Isn't that like a willfully ignorant misreading of the quote?
Yeah, I think it's easy for people to read into that what they want to read into it, right? And right. So, yeah, if you approach this with, oh, well, he hates Ayn Rand, then, yeah, you just read it as like, oh, yeah, see there, he hates Ayn Rand. But, yeah, it seems like he's just pointing out, like, you know, she took her ideas seriously.
Right, and, you know, she went a little over the top and things like that. We know how large of a personality she was. He also calls her incredible in the quote. But that's entirely the point, right? This is somebody who thinks like is using the Twitter thing, right? Where thinks like, oh, I'm going to get a slam dunk on you. I'm going to get a mic drop on you. So I was curious because to me, who reads a line of conversation, completely misunderstands it, posts something they completely misunderstand. I clicked on the profile. This person is 16 years old. So I just replied and was like, you're replying to things you don't understand what you're replying to. How many Ayn Rand books have you read? So the kid replies and is like, why does it matter how many I've read? Respond to my question. And then the kid just started spamming me, retweeting me, replying to me, saying, answer my question. He didn't found Atlas Entertainment. Why do you think he founded Atlas Entertainment? And, you know, eventually I just was ignoring it, right? At first I was like, you don't even know what you're saying. But I had to end up keep ignoring it to not encourage him. But it was interesting to me. What I was really grappling with at first, William, is and I know teenagers are known for this, but to me, this idea of assuming everything you know is right and you have all the knowledge in the world, and that this is literally someone who's less than half my age, right? Less than half my age, literally been alive, let's see, think about my age, pretty much about as long as I've been reading Ayn Rand or watching Zack Snyder movies, a little bit older than me analyzing them in depth. If you look at, you know, 2009's Watchmen, which is where I really started being like, what are the ideas in these movies? Rather than saying, oh, these people are saying something, maybe I should look into their perspective and what they have to say, going for the mic drop and dismissing. It's really interesting to me that social media has created a culture that even 16-year-olds are just like on there, all they're doing is affirming themselves. It's not a conversation medium anymore. Social media is just like, I'm going to convince myself over and over again how great I am, even though it's someone who doesn't have anywhere near the level of expertise.
Well, maybe he's a listener of the show. He's just heard you say this before.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am not a genius.
And so he was just trying to capitalize on it. But
yeah, but that quote, that drop you just used is the point I'm making. I have this level of expertise and I'm still open to being proven I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think it's funny. You wonder like how. Some of these are just, we talk about the NPC meme, and this I think is an example of the NPC meme, right? Like somehow in it's just a stimulus response, right? If someone mentions Zack Snyder and Ayn Rand, then he's just going to post this, right? Without really understanding the context of the conversation. And it doesn't matter to him, right?
He
100% read in that you thought something about, you know, Zack Snyder starting Atlas Entertainment when it was clear in the conversation, like you were talking about, hey, these are purposely put in this order for a reason. And that's just, you know, completely that doesn't matter. Right. Like you said, it's just a stimulus response. No
well,
thinking
right.
involved.
And that, right. And that's the thing that's crazy to me is we've created a society that, and I guess it's through the social programming of the clicks and the likes and everything, that it's all just stimulus response that, he's learned a behavior of seeing, it's actually extra ironic, and this is what we're going to build towards here in a second. It's extra ironic with the name Zack Snyder, because the way he's reacted to the name Ayn Rand is the way most people react to the name Zack Snyder. So it's really ironic that he defends one and attacks the other. But what was really sort of interesting for me is the next day, Sonny Bunch retweeted an article by Jonah Goldberg on Jonah Goldberg's site, The Dispatch, called How Man of Steel Got Superman Wrong. And William, this subheadline, you are not even going to believe. The subheadline is Zack Snyder's version of the character leaves behind patriotism for romantic self-worship.
Wow, I think I agree with this article already.
Well, you agree with the subheadline, but you don't agree that it's got Superman wrong.
Well, I would say wrong. I think wrong is hard because Superman has been done in so many different ways, right?
Right.
So it's hard to say, you know, wrong. I would say I think it's done right. But if you mean like true to its origins, then maybe you'd have a debate there, right? Superman was definitely started as sort of a patriotic, self-sacrificial, you know, Jesus sort of thing, right?
Well, that's where the argument goes.
Yeah. But, I mean, wrong in the sense of, like, bad. Well, no. I mean, this is a more integrated version of Superman.
Right. And have you ever heard anyone in the mainstream or anyone besides us talk about romantic self-worship in regards to Zack Snyder's Superman?
No. That's why I was like, man, I'm ready. I'm ready to agree with this article.
So someone in the Discord actually said that Jonah Goldberg must have a burner account that follows the midside, which is kind of funny. Because who else did he get it from them, right?
Yeah. But hey, welcome to the midside, Jonah.
Yeah. Jonah, glad you're listening out there. Thank you for listening. But this is where the second half of the quote goes into. Because think about what you said in the relation to nationalism, right, that Zack Snyder was talking about from the right, right? Because Jonah Goldberg is a figure on the right. So I'm going to read a couple paragraphs from the article. Let's take a look at Superman and Man of Steel. Back when Superman was indisputably the most popular superhero in the world, he was still a goody-goody. But he also bent his character to a cause larger than himself. America. That's a pretty nationalistic statement, right, William?
Definitely.
Specifically, truth, justice, and the American way. His upbringing in Kansas, the American heartland, was central to his story. Like a reverse Moses, he was cast out on an interstellar blanket not to be adapted by some... not to be adopted by some modern pharaoh, but by a family straight out of a normal Rockwell... Norman... He says normal. I think that's a typo. Norman Rockwell cover for the Saturday Evening Post. He fought in World War II, though less than you might think. DC worried that seeing Superman make short work of the Third Reich would be demoralizing. His awe-shucks patriotism and old-fashioned Midwestern decency defined him. Then he goes on to quote Man of Steel. The people of Earth are different from us, it's true, Jor-El says, but ultimately I believe that's a good thing. They won't necessarily make the same mistakes we did, not if you guide them, Cal, not if you give them hope. That's what this symbol means, he says, referring to the S that once stood for Superman but long ago was retconned as a family sigil. Embodied within that hope is the fundamental belief in the potential of every person to be a force for good. That's what you can bring. So Superman isn't a symbol of American moral might. No, he's a symbol that if everyone looks deep enough inside themselves, they can be super too. Rather than Superman's mission being to uphold the external values of his adoptive country and parents, it is to prove that you too can be all you can be if you're true to yourself. So, William, this goes beyond patriotism into nationalism, right? The idea of the external values of his adoptive country. And the thing that's crazy is, this literally bridges the gap between my analysis of these movies, right? We've talked before about this quote, and he analyzes this quote from Man of Steel exactly the same way I do. And the quote that was cut out of Justice League, which is in one of the original trailers, and then Whedon cannibalized it and made it about Wonder Woman in the theatrical cut, the idea that Superman doesn't just save people, he inspires them to be the best versions of themselves, right? That's right there. That's what he's supposed to be a symbol for. That you can't have a more clear statement of that. But then Goldberg is saying it should be nationalism instead. This literally bridges the gap between the quote that's supposed to be a slam dunk to say Zack Snyder doesn't like Ayn Rand to my analysis of Randian values in Zack Snyder's work. I mean, Zack Snyder knew this sort of reaction would be on the right to his movies. He wouldn't have said it otherwise. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think it's a good sign, right, if you anger both the left and the right. And so this is exactly the criticism that I would expect.
Yeah, 100%. He's not giving himself over to whatever the group of the right is. Yeah. And I mean, Snyder even said that previously where he was like, oh, truth, justice in the American way, whatever that is. Because I think, William, that this even points to sort of misunderstanding of the Declaration, right? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Sort of misunderstanding of the American way. It's all founded on individualism. The idea that the American way, the American dream, right? Everyone talks about the American dream as if it's the same for everyone. If it's the same for everyone. But the point from the beginning was the American dream is supposed to be what you think it is. Whatever that is. Whatever you think it is. The American way, whatever is whatever you think it is. And I think that's what Snyder injected into Man of Steel, into Superman for the first time. And what I found so interesting, William, about this happening the day after the conversation with the 16-year-old is this is all the context the 16-year-old is completely missing and dismissing in favor of just trying to mic drop me.
Yeah. Missing the deeper conversation for a surface level dunk.
Right. And it's like, what irreparable damage is being done to culture and the progression of the human species by this technology? By perhaps not the technology. Let me not say that because it's a tool, right? By our use of the technology.
Yeah, how we engage with it.
Something to think about, something to leave you with on this episode. It's just like, you know, as always, we want to talk about and think about how we engage with art. Put me into syndication, broadcast to
wasn't focused on.
As always, if you would like to continue the conversation during the week, you can do so by joining our Discord server. The link is on themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. You just click on any episode link, and in there, there's a link to join our Discord. We keep the conversation going during the week. We had a lot of conversation this week. I quoted something that was said on the show. It makes the show better. It makes your life better. It makes my life better. I'll just say that. It makes my life better. So go ahead, join the Discord. We would like to have other similar people with similar values in there. Before I go into my review for this week, William, I just want to ask very quickly, did you see the new Army of the Dead poster that Zack Snyder shared?
I did. What was your reaction, Justin?
My reaction was Zack Snyder was like, oh, you say I can't do color, huh? And then he just like slams his hand down on the table with the poster under it. Well, fuck you. And just walks away. I thought it was a beautiful poster, and yeah. I love the use of color in it. It's very Vegas-y, and it's very like action movie. I thought it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes, you know, the hype for this movie is only going to get bigger.
Yeah, and it makes me happy that the hype's growing. It makes me happy that Zack Snyder's not solely focusing on Zack Snyder's Justice League, that he's willing to pivot to Army of the Dead. And then also, he tweeted it out, and it's on the poster, William. It says, in select theaters. So it's not going to just be Netflix. We can actually go to the movie theater and see this. Maybe not in California.
Yeah, I'll have to fly out to Florida to see it.
Well, hey, you know, anyone's welcome. I'm hoping it'll show in Disney Springs. If not, I'll drive as far as I have to go see it. I'm pretty sure it'll be in Disney Springs. But anyone's welcome. If you want to come here and I mean that, anyone listening, if you want to come here and
enjoy the freedom of Florida.
Yeah, enjoy the freedom of Florida and see Army of the Dead with me. Just let me know. Hit me up via Discord. Hit me up via Twitter. And, you know, we'll make that happen once we find out that it's confirmed in AMC Disney Springs. If not, we'll find out where else we can go. Maybe we have to go to Tampa or Jacksonville or something. I'm down. I mean, it'll certainly be better than the movie I saw this week. So I went to theaters to see Godzilla versus Kong.
Oh, come on.
Oh, come on what?
Oh, a nice big monster movie. It's supposed to be summer popcorn thriller, right?
Okay, well, and from that perspective, it's fine, right? So let's go over the review system real quick, right? The review system is from worst to best. The possible ratings are just no, no bro, bro, bromantic, and the best rating being so bromantic. So sort of the middle rating is bro, and the top two ratings are bromantic and so bromantic. So I factored in what you're saying, William, in regards to reviewing this movie. And I'll start with that part of it first. The CGI of Godzilla and King Kong is amazing. And like, there was literally one point in the movie where King Kong punches Godzilla. And I was just like, holy crap. I literally said that out loud. Like it was a feat to watch. It's sort of like Avatar, where technologically Avatar was amazing to watch. Like what James Cameron did with that movie was great. And watching these two monsters fight was great. And then there were some amazing sci-fi elements in this movie. There's this whole concept of the Titans, that's what they're calling these kaijus, come from Hollow Earth. So there's a big tech company called Apex, which, using some of the main characters, they had to get down to Hollow Earth to figure out what was going on. There was essentially, William, a hyperloop from Pensacola, Florida to Hong Kong, which was, you know, neat to see that in a movie. But because of this, there were so many like mixes of movies. You know, what I'm referring to is there's like an underlying, you know, sort of Marvel Iron Man approach to things, where you have this huge tech company and the leader of the tech company is sort of like a Tony Stark figure. You've got elements of Batman versus Superman with these big fight between these beasts and, you know, they fight each other. But then there's a looming greater threat later on. You have elements of Avatar, like I just said. There's just so much stuff in this movie that it's not its own sort of thing, and it doesn't go beyond the surface level. And what makes it really distressing is, and I'm going to say major spoilers here. So William, hit the spoiler drop.
There's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
Okay, you've been warned. So that's what makes this movie distressing, is ultimately the ending of it and its relation to Avatar. The ending of this is Apex builds Mechagodzilla. Now, we know why the word Apex exists. Because why do they build Mechagodzilla? Because they want to make it so that humanity is once again the apex predator on the Earth. William, do you think this is shown in a positive or negative light?
I'm going to guess negative light.
It's shown in a negative light. It's the same problem I had with Kong Skull Island. Right? Kong Skull Island was all about... Kong Skull Island is even more Avatar, where it's all about how evil humans are because they're coming in and trying to destroy this peaceful habitat that exists. Well, it's the same thing here. Oh, this guy's corrupt and he's insane because he wants to do this. And of course, what happens? They lose control of Mechagodzilla and King Kong has to fight alongside Godzilla to have... King Kong has to fight alongside Godzilla to defeat Mechagodzilla. Misspoke there. I apologize. Right. This is where the elements of Batman versus Superman come in. The only difference is that's done differently. At no point in Batman versus Superman, even though it's Lex Luthor and Batman versus Superman, do you get a sense that this is a commentary on being rich. You get a sense that this is a commentary on certain types of psychologies. But here it's so shallow that it seems like this is just a commentary on, they even use the word alpha versus beta, and alpha being bad again, the old Hollywood stereotype of that. And it's a commentary on wealth, it's a commentary on capitalism, it's a commentary on productivity and progress, right, and technology. Yeah.
Don't you kind of have to expect that, though? I mean, if you look at at least Godzilla, sort of the theme, like the thematic growth of it, right, is really like man's destructive force, right? And so I guess it would be an interesting challenge to write a Godzilla movie that was pro-man, right? Because the whole point of Godzilla is sort of this response to the trauma of the bomb, right? So it'd be interesting to try and do that. So I guess I'm not surprised by these themes, but the fact that they're so surface level is probably the most disappointing.
Right. No, 100%. You're 100% correct, and that factors into my review of it. But also the second thing that you said factors into the review with the shallow level of it, right? They're partway there. Right, it's a response to the bomb in Japan, the idea that it's out of your control, reality is out of your control to a certain extent, and you just have to respond to what happens. They have that in there, right? And that's why the man is trying to create Mechagodzilla. But then to make it so they lose control of it and they're not capable of doing it, it's like you're part of the way there. You're getting there. But it has this, here's the problem. It has this whole premise baked into it, William, that Godzilla and Kong are only going to attack you if they see you as threats. So it's this idea that humans, by making themselves subservient to nature, can survive, which is so anti-reality. That's different from what you said the theme is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, just look not non-threatening next time a lioness is chasing you.
Right. As if it's not rational for this guy to be, oh, there's a giant lizard that rules the earth now. Maybe we need to have a mechanism of protection in case he goes crazy and starts attacking us again. Because, you know, this lizard clearly responds to things rationally in the sense that it's only if he feels threatened. Right? Like, what if he takes, like, humans fighting each other as a threat?
What if someone microaggresses him?
Right. So that's the problem with it, right? Now, again, I did factor in what you said. Popcorn flick. When Kong punches Godzilla, it's cool. There's a lot of good, you know, good visual stuff. It was fun. Is this something I would ever see again? No. But I am willing to, and this is a little tough. I was fluctuating between no bro and bro. I'm willing to give this a nice middle bro. It's worth seeing in theaters to see it, but it's not something you're ever going to want to think about again. You're not going to love it, and you're not going to be like, oh, wow, that's the greatest movie I've ever seen. It changed my life. But, you know, you're not going to go there and hate that you saw it. You just have to accept what William's saying about what the themes are. You have to accept that what the ideas behind it. and appreciate the cool sci-fi stuff, the Hyperloop, the Hollow Earth, the Journey to Hollow Earth kind of was like the movie Black Hole back in the day. So if you can just appreciate that, this is a nice solid bro. So that's a
trailer
movie that's already out.
Down.
Hit it.
Way to step on it, Justin.
Oh, no, not even a drop. You're going to say it. Yeah, so as I was going to say, those are the movies that are already out. That's a movie that's already out. Let's talk about some movies that are going to come out. Hit the drop.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
The Columnist is a European film about a woman who is harassed on Twitter by trolls, and she's a newspaper columnist, and then she goes out and starts attacking them. Like, she finds out where they live and starts attacking them. So there was one really interesting scene in this, and it's where the trailer flips. You know, the first half of the trailer is like, well, they're attacking me and saying mean things on Twitter, which happens to everyone, by the way. You know, women and minorities.
Women and minorities, like, hardest hit. Yep, exactly.
Right. They act like they're targeted. It's like, you realize they're just picking the thing you're going to be the most sensitive about, right? That's what they're picking. Whenever anyone's told me, they looked at my profile, looked at my picture, and they pick things they think I'm going to be sensitive about, and they attack me about it. That's it.
I probably got called a dog 5 times yesterday playing League of Legends.
Yeah, it's the way people are. But she's so sensitive to this that she finds a troll and goes to his house. And that's okay. That's kind of interesting. It kind of reminds me of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, where they find the guy posting on Movie Poop Shoot and go to his house and beat him up. Right. But I thought she was going to confront him and have a conversation, be like, why did you say these things? And the conversation started that way. But then she attacks him. And that's what the rest of the movie seems to be. This is like the third type of movie. I know a woman who made a movie called MFA about a woman who became a vigilante against rapists on a college campus. A similar movie is out called, or coming out, called Promising Young Woman. So this sort of revenge against the patriarchy film is sort of becoming a new genre type. I don't know how many genre types we can have. Hopefully this isn't the next big one, right? Western society progresses from Westerns being really big to comic book movies to revenge against the patriarchy films. That would kind of be terrifying. Half of this was interesting, half of it wasn't, because of the second half and because it's a foreign language film and I don't want to read subtitles to watch this kind of stuff. Tackle.
So, ironically, this is just Toxic Masculinity, the movie. I mean, isn't this, how is this different than sort of, thinking back into like, not medieval times, but sort of Victorian times where, or even in the southern United States, during the antebellum, you know, insults are deadly and therefore we must duel, at noon or whatever, right? Like, this is just toxic masculinity, but we've changed the main, insults equals death. We've changed the main character to female. Is this going to go in the revenge porn sort of direction, or is this going to go into the more moralistic side? Like, maybe the only thing that would be interesting is if some of these people that she kills aren't just the cookie cutter. I mean, literally the guy in his boxers in his mom's basement sort of thing was the first person that she kills, right? In the preview. What about that 16-year-old that sent you Twitter messages, right? Like, for the most part, this is going to skew young and left, like who's on Twitter. So it's going to be interesting, all the old white men she's going to kill in the movie. I think I could pass on this. Tackle.
Second trailer.
Space Jam, A New Legacy is part of LeBron James' never-ending quest to prove he is the GOAT instead of Michael Jordan. He takes over the mantle of starring in a Looney Tunes basketball movie. And this one is, it's confusing for me, William. It is very, very confusing for me. You know, the animation's fine, right? Like, it's what you would expect and all that stuff. But I don't understand how this is Space Jam. the first movie, they went to space and fought aliens who took over other NBA stars and became the Monstars to try and beat Michael Jordan. I don't remember why they tried to beat him, but the movie took place in space.
It takes place, Spaces. Justin, come on now, in cyberspace.
All right, I'm out. Tackle. Space Jam.
Tackle.
So
that is so stupid. That's so stupid.
I'm surprised you didn't pick that up. For once, I got one up on you.
That's how stupid it was.
This movie is trying, I guess, to be Ready Player One, but with Warner Brothers properties. Exclusively featuring the Looney Tunes? I don't know.
I want aliens, William.
There were some in the background. I think the Clockwork Orange, someone caught the Clockwork Orange cast in characters in the background during one of the basketball scenes. I don't know. This movie looks like it's... There are kids' movies where adults can enjoy them too. I don't think this is one of them. I think this is targeted to kids only. This isn't Sonic. So I think I'll just let the children watch it, and I'll avoid it. Tackle.
Ugh, tackle. Third trailer.
Wrath of Man is a Jason Statham action movie. In it, he gets a job working for a security agency that handles armored truck deliveries. I don't know if there are any other type of security they do, but the movie seems to focus on armored truck deliveries. But in it, you begin to see he is not what you expect. You know, people in the movie are surprised. This badass ball guy looks like he's a badass, or he acts like he's a badass. He starts seeming to provoking the criminals into attacking the trucks so he can attack them. And there's a plot about him trying to get revenge for his son. I've watched this trailer twice. I'm not exactly sure what this movie is about, but this would fall into what you're saying, William, in sort of the revenge type of movie. This is sort of like a Taken starring Jason Statham. It's sort of like a John Wick starring Jason Statham. And you know what? This is the kind of movie I want to see, because I know going in that this movie will get at least a bro. I don't know what the execution is going to be. I don't know what the directing is going to be like. I don't know the cinematography. I don't know the writing, but I don't see how this could fall below a bro. So this is something that I will see in theaters. Hug.
It's got guns. It's got my boy in it. Lots of action. I think this is a movie I would love to see in theaters, just to have that theater popcorn experience, watching a ship blow up and people get justice. What a contrast, man, with The Columbist, right? Someone who's actually armed and trying to steal someone else's money, and this guy just comes in and blows all their heads off. I mean, it's gratuitous and over the top, sure, but this actually looks fun. So, I will hug it.
Hug. Final trailer.
Star Wars The Bad Batch is an animated Star Wars show for Disney Plus that seems to be a sequel to the Clone Wars animated show. I say seems because I am not educated enough on Star Wars to be able to speak where this fits in, but there is a line in the trailer that says, like, the Clone Wars are over. So that made me think it was set after the Clone Wars show, especially because it's the same style of animation. I like a lot of what's going on here. It's the sort of the cliche Western where here's a team, and this team is going to go out and do renegade missions. And that could be really cool in the Star Wars universe. I could see Star Wars people being really, 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 really excited for this. It looks like it's different from a lot of the Disney Star Wars stuff that's been done so far. The name is even very much like a Western, right? The Bad Batch. That sounds like a Western movie. Although, I get what they're going for with it. It might be a little too on the nose for me. I don't remember the name of the team. It was like Clone Something 99. I probably would have named the show that, especially because it was said multiple times in the trailer. But beyond that, for me, and I totally respect you Star Wars fans out there that you're probably going to love this, not that I have any other option, but for me, this is a Netflix and hug.
Netflix and hug.
Especially if, William, someone like Daniel tells me it's really, really good. It's got to be super good, because like people tell me how good The Mandalorian is, and I still don't really like it beyond the Bill Burr episodes. So this has to be, whenever you guys beta test this and you watch it and it's amazing, then I'll definitely watch it.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Mandalorian isn't earth-shatteringly good. It's just so jarringly refreshing compared to the films, right? And I think as a fan thirsting, if you're a Star Wars fan and you're thirsting for actually living in the Star Wars world, the sequel trilogy just felt out of place. So you felt like you were in a different universe, not the Star Wars universe. At least in The Mandalorian, you feel like you're in the right universe.
I agree.
So maybe that's just that whiplash that gets people excited. The sunk cost fallacy, I guess. Yeah, I like this trailer as well. I have not watched all of Clone Wars. I meander through it and then lose my place and have to start a few episodes back and get back into it. I've appreciated it. So this intrigues me, and I too, I think, will be waiting with bated breath for Daniel to, one, ever jump onto Discord, but two, join a conversation and let us know how good this is, because there's very few reasons for me to keep Disney Plus around right now. There's not much going on, so maybe this will help me keep it. We'll see.
Netflix and hug.
That's certainly their plan. That is certainly their plan. All right, William, let's wrap this episode up. What did we learn this trip?
I learned that individuals can make different choices, and they can be rational at the same time. Justin, what did you learn this trip?
You didn't learn that. You're being rhetorical. I learned just how smart Snyder is, man. He keeps impressing me. I mean, he literally called what the right reaction would be, and Jonah Goldberg gave it to him. And I'm going to end on this thought that Midsider Michael said to me when I talked to him about it. How far behind the times are the right if they're just getting to this way of attacking Snyder now? Right? It took a 4-hour movie that there was a 3-year fan campaign for them to attack him, whereas the left has been after Snyder for, better part of a decade almost. All right, I want to thank everyone for listening. We always appreciate it. That's what makes the show worthwhile. Otherwise, it would just be us having a conversation into a microphone. Want to thank our Liberty.me listeners. We love you, libertarians. Hopefully, we had an interesting discussion about the vaccine passport. I know that's brought out a lot of sort of the libertarian public figures to say things and say some things that maybe you shouldn't have said, that the Twitter for the Libertarian Party of Kentucky. Yeah, let's lay off of the Nazi comparisons, huh? Not saying you're wrong about the size of the growth of government, or about the growth of the size of government, excuse me, but not a good idea to compare everything to Nazis. Kind of makes the point missed. So, yeah. If you want to support us, you can do so any number of ways. Patreon, Locals, as I mentioned earlier in the show, Patreon per episode, Locals per month, themidside.com/Patreon, themidside.com/Locals. You can check out my book, The Cut. It's based on a true story novel about what happened behind the scenes of the Snyder Cut's initial production. Not everything after, not the campaign, not the reshoots, but before Zack Snyder left the original production, based on a true story, not what actually happened, fictionalization of it. And as always, the most important thing you can do to grow the show is tell a friend. Let's get more people like us in here. That is what's going to grow the Midside. That is what's going to get our culture back on track. And that is what's going to make our lives better. I know my life has been better over the now 8 years I've done this show into the 9th season.
Well, Justin, you know what's going to make your life even better? The Expanse. Don't forget, we're going to start watching The Expanse, go episode by episode, Justin, we just need your commitment. What week are we going to start?
Let's start this week if you can get me a login so I can watch.
All right. We'll start with episode one. Join us on Discord. There is the Expanse spoilers thread. I will make just Expanse no spoilers for folks going through it the first time like Justin, and we'll go through the Expanse.
So we'll schedule a time to record and we'll send the announcement out so you guys can listen in live to the discussion as we record. I'm hoping, William, Saturday?
All right.
All right. I'm hoping on Saturday. We'll let you know. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a passport-free day. All I can think about is the meat I'm going to be eating in about 7 hours.
That's all I can think about, too. I'm very jealous of your meat.
I had a nickel for every time I heard that. I'd have a nickel.